Welcome everybody to Reds Ramblings. I have with me today Daryl Davis. Daryl is an American musician and leader of the Daryl Davis Band, who has played with Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, B.B. King, and many others, and is considered one of the greatest boogie-woogie artists of his generation. Daryl is also known for his involvement in befriending members of the KKK and other organizations of the like, in getting them to change their views of the world, to renounce those ideals and see the world in better eyes. Thank you so much, Daryl, for joining me today. My voice just cracked. I am crazy nervous. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed. Really appreciate being on here and you're taking the time to speak with me.
Well, when I sent the email to your receptionist, I was not expecting a reply. I was at work the night that I got the reply, and crazy excited. So once again, thank you. You've done a lot in your life, from, you know, growing up, traveling all over the world, you know, with your parents, because your father was a member of foreign services, if I remember correctly.
Correct. Exactly.
To playing in bands and playing music for easily probably most of your life, for sure, and primarily is what you do. But you're also incredibly well known for what you've done in, like I just mentioned, in changing the minds of individuals to see the world better, see the world how it should be seen, in my opinion. Others would argue against that, but, you know, sadly, that's the world we live in. But that's not how you got started. I don't recall reading or listening to anything about you start like, hey, I'm going to start changing minds, right?
No, you know, I never set out to do that. You know, it kind of became organic. I just set out to find out, you know, why people, you know, think that way. Where does that ideology come from? Mm-hmm. And as a result of conversations, the ideology began changing. It was not something that I had planned. You know, I never set out to convert anybody, even though the media, you know, puts it out, well, you know, black musician converts X number of Klansmen. I didn't convert them, they converted themselves. But yes, I would say that I was the impetus, you know, for their self introspection and conversion.
Yeah, because I've listened to, probably like most people, I heard of you in from articles or whatnot, like you just said, media says, you know, black musician converts 200 plus members of KKK. But I first really heard you on the Joe Rogan podcast. I would assume a lot of people as well. And since then, big fan, love what you do. We definitely need more people like that, like yourselves, to do the same thing. And just, again, you say you don't convert, you never set out to do it, but it ended up being, it seems to be the case sometimes.
Yeah.
But just to get people to see the world through a better worldview, to see that we are all alike, you know, we have tons of differences, but when it comes down to it, we're just human beings.
Precisely. Just human precisely. Beings. You know, and, you know, you mentioned my traveling and stuff as a kid in the Foreign Service. I'm 62 years old, and I started traveling at the age of 3 in 1961. I traveled around the world, living in different countries during my formative years. And when you combine my travels as a kid with my travels now as an adult musician, traveling around the world performing, I've been now in 57 different countries on 6 continents. And I've seen a lot of different people. I've seen a lot of different religions, different cultures, different belief systems, you know, whatever. But, you know, you pointed it out. When I come home at the end of the day, you know, I conclude one thing. We all are human beings, no matter how far I've gone from this country. And we all basically want the same 4 or 5 things. We want to be loved. We want to be respected. We want to be heard. We want to be treated fairly. And we want the same thing for our family as anybody else wants for their family. And as long as we can, you know, remember those core values and give those to the people that we encounter, regardless of who they worship, how they worship, you know, what color they are, what language they speak, how different they may look or whatever, we can navigate that society. So I apply that to white supremacists as well, or anybody else.
Yes. Yes, I know. I live in South Carolina. Born and raised here in the South. Obviously a white guy for anyone who's not watching the video. I'm white.
All right.
And I've never been outside the country, but my grandmother has, and my grandmother was born on a tobacco farm in North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. So
is that out of the country from South Carolina?
No, but she's traveled. Yes, but she has traveled since. She's no longer with us, but I distinctly remember growing up curious because I knew where my grandmother came from, tobacco farm in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Since I knew where she came from, I was always curious as to what her views on other races were. She never gave off that vibe of racism, right? But it never really been spoken, right? Because I remember when I first dated a young Black woman named Rachel, and I was legitimately worried to bring her home. I knew my mom was going to be okay with it. I was not worried about that. But strictly because my grandmother was raised on a tobacco farm in North Carolina, I was, you know, a little hesitant. Even though I knew my grandmother very well, sometimes you just don't know everything, right?
Right. But something in your mind told you, I need to tread cautiously here. What was that thing?
I think it was literally just, you know, she was 67, I think, when she passed. And this was 12-ish years ago, I want to say. I think I was 16 or 17 when I was dating this girl. So I think it was just knowing how she grew up and knowing how, you know, tobacco farms, North Carolina, I just kind of, I guess, blindly believed that there was some racism probably entrenched in her upbringing, right? Because it was the early 1900s on a tobacco farm in the South. I just blindly believed that, right? But I remember bringing Rachel home, sitting her on the couch with my grandmother across, and I was like, hey, you know, I introduced, sweetie, that's fine. You be who you want to be. And I just remember like a wave of relief washing over me. You know, it felt great. You know what I'm saying? Because in the back of my mind, I wasn't 100% sure. Right. And I just remember that wave just rushing over me. And that was my first inclination that even if you came from what people would assume to be possibly have, you know, a place where racism was a thing, again, early 1900s, tobacco farm, North Carolina. Some people might automatically assume that, right? Mm-hmm. To know that at least my grandmother wasn't one of those, because I'm not one of those. My family's never been one of those people. It brought such a huge relief to me. And growing up, one of the things I've hated to see is I have plenty of Black friends I grew up with. And one of the things, especially this year's been a roller coaster of emotion, of turmoil, of everything in this country, right?
Right.
And since I started this podcast, kind of just to have fun, right? To talk with people, share ideas, have some laughs. And then the George Floyd situation happened. And that struck me to like really it struck me to my core to an extent. Never met the guy, never been over in that part of the country, but I know people. I know people have experienced that. I know people that have other people in their families, their friends, you know, relatives that have experienced that kind of situation. And the fact that it was like put live out there for the whole world to see as it happened. It's like, I don't remember who exactly, I think it was your Bart podcast that you have on your own podcast when you said that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Because you mentioned, you know, there have been countless other cases, but right. For some reason that one struck a nerve in this country.
Well, part of the reason, there were several factors. One, the virus is out there. And so people were out of work. They're on lockdown. Mm-hmm. Their businesses are shut down. They had to stay home. So what do? They watch TV. They tune into social media, you know? And so their whole focus was on that. Yes. Whereby had there not been the virus, you know, it would have been just a footnote in the news somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, people who needed to see it, you know, we see it, we as in Black people see it all the time.
Yes.
But the people who need to see it were watching this time around because mm-hmm. there was nothing else they could do. They, you know, they weren't focusing on their jobs because they didn't have a job at that particular time.
Yeah, I think I was working at the time, but again, I'm in the South. So mm-hmm. it was front page. Everyone, you know, the whole country, the whole world was talking about it. And so my focus on the podcast sort of shifted because being a white guy from the South, I kind of felt like I had to essentially do my part, do what I could to bring focus to the situation and let people know that that's not the way it can be. That the world should not be that way, situation that occurred just then. So I started talking to Black friends of mine. My old therapist is a Black man, Dr. Terry Miller, shout out to him, who helped me a lot growing up because I was an angry kid growing up, right? He helped me a lot. I'm still friends with him to this day. Brought him on, spoke about situations that he's had encountered. You know, he owns his own business. He's a doctor in child psychology and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And he was still experiencing stuff like that. And that was a story from him I never experienced. Like he never told me about that. And other friends I've spoken to were telling me stuff that I had no idea about, you know, because I knew them on a friendly level as, you know, hey, what's up? Cool, yada, yada. But I'd never known that stuff like that had happened to them, right?
Right, that's called white privilege.
100%, 100%. And it started to hit even more when I thought of, you know, I didn't really have neighbors growing up, essentially. Mm-hmm. We were in a small little tight-knit community. But it was like, you know, if I grew up here and I had my upbringing, but I could have had essentially a Black neighbor right across the street from me. And me and him went to the same school. Me, him, or her went to the same school, same everything. Yet he would have had a totally different upbringing than I did, strictly because he was Black, because he or she was a different color. Doesn't have to be Black, just any other color other than white. Mm-hmm. They would have been treated differently growing up than I would have. They would experience totally different things than I would have. And that pisses me off. Like, it really does. But and so talking with that and seeing it on a level that I kind of knew about, but like you said, I've never experienced that to any sort of degree, you know. So I want
sometimes to... sometimes, you know, it can be overt. Other times it can be very subtle. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. I was hired to play piano behind this lady singer, and we went into some rural area to go do this gig at this club, and we stopped to get gas on the way down there. And the gas station had like a little convenience store inside. And so she'd gone in there to get chips or candy or something. And I came in after I pumped my gas and she was in line. And so she paid the lady the money for what it was she was buying. And the lady took the money out of her hand and gave her change back in her hand. And I was a couple of people behind her. So she's standing off to the side waiting on me. And then I give the lady, I hand her out a $20 bill or whatever. And she takes it and I'm holding my hand for the change and she puts it down on the counter.
Yeah.
You know, and my friend saw that and she like freaked out. Like, now this is a white lady singer. And, you know, she said, you know, she'd heard about that kind of thing, but she'd never seen it.
Yeah.
And it was just a subtle thing, but I see it all the time. Mm.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, again, I'm trying from my little platform that I have with my show and just talking with people, I'm trying to bring light to try and close that divisiveness that we have. Because like you've traveled around the world to different countries and you see the similarities, even though so-and-so was born literally on the other side of the planet, right? Mm-hmm. With mine, I primarily speak to people from other countries. Like I've spoken with a guy from Malaysia, a woman from the Philippines, Japan, China, Ecuador, Estonia, you name it, South Africa, everywhere I'm trying to, right? And at the end of the day, that's what you see. You see like, okay, exactly. So-and-so had a completely different upbringing, different religion, different job, different everything, rich, poor, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But when you speak to them and you get on that level, we're all alike. We're exactly. all alike. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful when you come to see that. It's like, it's something I've always known in the back of my mind, but to have this experience, have this ability to go out and speak to these people and realize that, have it essentially like right there in your face, like me and you are kind of face to face right now, mm-hmm. to see it face to face, that dude, you know, that guy, that woman's the same as me, just from over there, you know, or over there. And it's wonderful to come across and to experience.
And, you know, it's our fault that we don't do more of that, because, okay, so I've said I've been to 57 countries. I've been to the 49 out of our 50 states as well. But not everybody is going to have that experience.
Yes.
And that does not make me a better human being than anybody else. It just gives me a broader perspective. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. But through today's technology, which you have employed very well, you are still traveling. You're doing it virtually. All right. You know, either through the telephone, through email, through Zoom, through whatever, you are communicating with people outside of your home base of South mm-hmm. Carolina. And, you know, so essentially you are traveling, which brings to mind, you know, one of my favorite quotes, which is the travel quote by Mark Twain. It's called the travel quote. Mm-hmm. And Mark Twain said, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. And many of our people need it sorely on these accounts.
Yes.
Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's lifetime." And that is so true. So, you know, most Americans don't travel. And and even about 50% of us don't even have passports. But there's, there you go. You know, but there's no excuse not to explore, be it virtually or whatever. You know, not everybody may have the money or the time or whatever to go across the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean to some other land or whatever, but we can access that. We have the technology, we have the tools, and there's no reason not to explore that. You know, this is our planet. And, you know, I know people who live, like I live, for example, I live 15 minutes from the DC line. I live in Maryland. So Washington, D.C. is only 15 minutes away. During non-rush hour, I could be at the White House in 25 minutes, right? I know people who live 15 minutes on the other side of me, all right? So they're about maybe 35, 40 minutes from downtown D.C. They've never been to the Washington Monument. Why?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I've been saying to everyone who I speak to, because when you speak to so many people, and I'm sure you've come across it as well, you learn things that you never would have thought, right? Obviously I had an American education, so I was taught certain things. And one, I've always been a lover of history. I love history anyways. But in talking with people from around the world, I find that there's certain stuff that's left out, right? Mm-hmm. Certain stuff that, you know,
didn't make us look like, so good.
Right? Exactly. And so my worldview in that sense has been broadening. Like I'm trying to, you know, once my kid gets, you know, to where he's able to learn a little bit easier, I'm definitely going to show him the same stuff that I'm learning right now. Cause I don't want him to, when you grow up like that, you're kind of forced to be narrow-minded because it's all you know. But kind of like you just mentioned with today's technology, you have the ability, if you so choose, to get out there in the world in one form or another. You know, like you said, I don't travel. no one really travels right now anyways.
Right.
But I still am able to speak with people all over the world. You know, like I have a podcast later on today with a lady from the Netherlands, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm still able to do this in some fashion, and it's bringing everybody closer. And so I want to ask you one thing for sure. In the years you've been alive, you've seen it essentially all, right? I mean, would it be fair to say, even though the George Floyd definitely was like took us a few steps back, but it highlighted an area that needed to be talked about. It highlighted something that needed to be discussed, needed to be focused upon. Do you see us getting better strictly because of the access we have to information around the world? Like, you don't have that narrow-mindedness so much anymore.
It's still there under the surface, but yes, we are turning a page, absolutely. Yes. And I'll tell you what that page is. We turn pages with Rosa Parks. We turn pages with Dr. King. You know, we turn pages with Rodney King. But we're turning a major page in the book with George Floyd. And as I pointed out before on other interviews, you know, there have been countless George Floyds
yes.
in the past. This particular George Floyd was indeed the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, what we're seeing here is, yes, it's getting better. It's bittersweet because there's so much chaos and violence mm-hmm. and stuff yes. like that going on. But, you know, anytime there's going to be change, there's going to be some upheaval. Because yes. human beings are creatures of habit. You know, they talk the talk, but most of them don't walk the walk.
Yeah,
you know they want to see change, you know, they want this and that, but then when it comes, they're not ready for it, and yeah. there's upheaval and resistance. So we're seeing more of a collective voice today. Mm-hmm. And I believe that what's going on today is probably the most significant and best thing that has happened mm-hmm. since 1968, mm-hmm. Which is in the 20th century, right? I was 10 years old in 68. This is when Dr. King was assassinated. Because we are seeing more of a collective voice. And when I say collective voice, more people who don't yeah. look like me participating in these marches and protests and demonstrations for the rights of all people.
Yes.
Where we weren't seeing that a lot in the past. We've always had white people participate in our protests. They've always been there, but there's only been a handful, you know, yeah. through the 60s and stuff. Today, you look at the protesters, man, it's almost half and half, you know? Yeah. And it's that collective voice that brings change. Because when, in the past, you know, you have this big sea of Black people marching and demonstrating and crying out for equal justice, enough is enough, and so forth and so on. But the powers that be, in other words, the white power structure, you know, they're like this. You know,
yeah.
They don't want to yeah. hear what we have to say. They shut us down. But today, when they see us, they're seeing more people who look like them. So therefore, now they're like, what's up? You know, they're pulling out the earplugs yeah. and putting in their hearing aids and they're listening. So, you know, they're listening.
Yes.
And for the first time in our history, we are seeing changes come a lot faster mm-hmm. than we've ever seen before. We're seeing the NASCAR ban the Confederate yeah. flag, the state of Mississippi, right,
yeah.
which is a, you know, it's a holdout, that. You know, pulling out that symbol. One. Yeah, the Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben's food brands. We're seeing legislation be passed to take down statues and all this kind of stuff. So these are things, you know, and we're seeing police officers who've been blatantly,
yes.
you know, not honoring their code of conduct and all that kind of thing, being charged. And fired a lot quicker, where in the mm-hmm. past, if they were charged, if they were fired, it took months and months.
Yes.
You know? So what is the difference? between why is it happening so much now than, you know, when we've been crying out for it for decades. The difference is we have more of that collective voice.
Yes.
You know, and it was that collective voice that that put Barack Obama in office, for example. Black people did not put Barack Obama in office. It was white people. Black people only make up 12% of this country, all right? And out of that 12%, not all of us are eligible to vote. Some of us are too young. Some of us are not registered. Some of us are felons. So we lose that right to vote. But even, let's just say, even if every Black person in this country, including newborn babies, could vote, that still would not have been enough to get Barack Obama elected. Right? We still needed a large percentage of the white vote to help out. Because like I said, we're only 12%, and less than that when it comes down to who can vote, right? 20 years ago, Obama never could have won. And there have been other Black, you know, Black leaders who were definitely qualified to run this country, but the attitude was not there. The same attitude that you worried about in regards to your grandmother, that, you know, the attitude that you were concerned about when you were going to bring your Black friend Rachel home or whatever, you know, that attitude did exist in this country 20 years ago, and there was no way in heck, you know, they're going to put a Black man in the White House. But by 2008, there were enough people whose attitudes had changed, and they were willing to say, hey, you know what, I like that guy's policies. You know, he's got my vote, check. And, you know, that's how it happened, that collective voice. And that's what we need to focus on, you know, the collective voice, not just, you know, this voice has got to do this and do this. We got to bring everybody into the fold.
Yeah, and I could easily agree. I mean, I'm only 30, but in the times that other George Floyd situations have happened, you would always, since social media has been a thing, is you would see certain group of people okay with whatever happened, and other group of people vehemently like, how dare that happen, blah, 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 right? And I could easily see a shift after George Floyd, like, you never used to think that way, but now you are, you know, you were against, you know, Black people essentially, or you gave off that vibe essentially, but now you can see that they're defending them. I can easily see that from the white individuals that I know, that there's definitely been a more vocal shift of their defense of Black people and how they are treated. I see that easily, you know, again, being here in the South, it's either, you know, I'm saying it's very divisive down here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I remember when you all had the, Confederate flag atop the, state Capitol. Yeah. That was a very divisive thing as well.
Yeah. And I know since speaking, since the George Floyd and other instances happened, I have a friend who was military at one point, and now he's going to be a cop, right? So, and he was a white individual. And I had him on. And the reason I had him on, because he openly spoke about how he was raised around, like he knew members of his family were in the Klan. So while he didn't necessarily see himself as part of the Klan, he was kind of grew up around that idea, that following. So it was in his mind as a child growing up. And so he kind of lived a life more geared towards those people than someone of a more open mind. And it wasn't till he joined the military and he was surrounded by people from all over the country, from all over the world, where he finally started to see that, well, all that shit, you know, I grew up learning, you know, about, I'm not gonna say white power because he didn't even say that either, but about one type of people being better than the other isn't the thing. Like here I am on the battlefield. I'm having to depend on my Black brother or Asian brother or whoever it is to have my back so I can go home to my family. Right. And he was open about it. He was like, yeah, like I realized that that was not right. That the way my family was not the way that the world should be. And he was open about it. And so when he got out, he started to he joined a police force here locally, and he went through the training, and he saw like the training wasn't what he expected. It wasn't as good as he expected. So he actually switched over to another agency because he had a whole lot better training, a lot better individual training, a lot better, you know, racial injustice training, so on and so forth. It was a lot more immersive. And so that's his plan right now as he climbs the ranks, is to be that guy, that vocal, you know, power to say, hey, look, we're all in this together, man. Like, you can't go after so-and-so for one thing and then go after another one. And because he's different, you're going to go after him a little bit harder. You know what I'm saying? We're all the same. We got to protect everybody and all that kind of good stuff. And the fact it made me, it shocked me a little bit, not shocked me, but it warmed my heart essentially that this man was open about it, you know, open about it. He expressed it, and I'm sure his family heard it, and he probably got some, you know, bad calls and bad looks, you know, after the fact. But the fact that he stood his ground and he came out and open and admitted to the faults that he had growing up meant a lot, in my opinion. And
yeah, and you know, as you point out, you know, he probably got some sideways glances from members of his own family, but he also may have connected with some members of his family and some of his, you know, buddies from high school or whatever else, you know, and gave them pause, you know, for thought.
Yes.
And perhaps, you know, they deviated. Because I'll tell you something, I can tell you a similar story that I see all the time. Not so much during lockdown, of course, because as you point out, you know, we're not traveling. But I give anywhere from 60 to 80 lectures a year, mostly colleges and universities, but other places as well. And 2 to 3 out of every 10 lectures I give, this will happen. You know, I'll do the lecture, and then I'll do a Q&A, and at the end of the lecture and the Q&A, I'm done. You know, there'll still be students who will approach me at the podium to ask one last question or whatever, or they want to see some of the Klan robes that I brought or whatever, right? Well, 2 or 3 times out of 10, there'll be one student off in the distance, standing away from the crowd. And he or she is not doing anything. They're just kind of like milling around. And so I've come to learn, you know, what's happening. Because, you know, they're not leaving. They're not staying. They're just doing nothing. Well, what they're doing is they're waiting for everybody to leave me. Yeah. And when everybody dissipates, he or she will come over. And they'll, like, you know, look around, make sure nobody's around. And they'll say, hey, you know, I really enjoyed your lecture. You know, my mom's in the Klan, or my dad's a neo-Nazi. And that's how I was raised. And they, you know, and they talk about their neighborhood and whatever else. And now they're at University of fill in the blank. And I'm dating this Jewish guy, or my girlfriend's black, or my best friend is gay, or my boyfriend's Muslim, you know, or whatever. And I can't bring that person home. My parents will kill me, or they'll disown me. And I don't want to tell my friend because my friend will drop me. So they got this secret that is burning an ulcer on their chest. And they got to get it out. And, you know, I'm the best person for them to talk to. So, you know, we talk about it. But it's exactly what you're pointing out. You know, they come from a homogenous area where everybody goes to the same high school. They read the same books. They cheer the same sports team, swim in the same community swimming pool, shop in the same grocery store, go to the same church, vote for the same politicians. So essentially, it's very homogenous.
Yes.
And then when they leave there and come to college, the high school or neighborhood doesn't necessarily come with them, right?
Yeah.
But at the college or university, there are neighborhoods from all over the country and people there from all over the world. And they're seeing things that you know, that they never learned about in the neighborhood, or that blatantly did not fit what they were taught in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are talking, you know, Jewish people have horns, or black people have tails, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, those things, you know, are myths. And so they're realizing this, and they're realizing how unfortunate their peers back home were that they have not seen this.
Yeah.
You know, and how do they go home and tell their parents, you know, what you thought about such and such simply isn't true? You know, their parents wanted them to go and get an education, but they didn't want them to get that education.
I think, I don't no one's come to me and said, hey, I've watched some of your stuff and I see where what I was thinking was wrong or at fault, right? I'm hoping there's someone out there that thinks that. Your podcast is called Changing Minds, right?
Changing Minds with Daryl Davis, because there are a lot of podcasts called Changing Minds, apparently.
Yes, everyone needs to listen to that, because I've been, since your receptionist got back with me, I've been listening to a fair amount of it. I haven't done all of it, but I've been listening to a good amount of it.
I appreciate it.
Oh, it's wonderful. But a few months ago, before I even found out you had your own podcast, I made a shirt, and I'm kind of wearing it. I don't know if you can see it. Anyway,
getting out of the way. Change your mind,
Change your mind, save a generation, because essentially I feel that's what it is. If you, like, let's use your 200-plus Klan members that have essentially had their minds changed. Well, they go back to their family, and hopefully, if all is well, you know, they change their wife's mind, husband's mind, daughters, sons, whatever. That's a whole generation that's been changed as well. And in turn, any individual not of their, you know, type, not of white person that they interact with, essentially is basically they could be befriended with now. That now they don't see them as an adversary or as lesser than they are. So that's a whole generation saved, essentially.
Exactly.
So that's what I started mine. And when I found out that your podcast is kind of playing around the same thing, I was like, oh, that's cool. I like that. But it's what needs to happen. It's definitely what needs to happen, because there are a lot of backward thinking people in this world that, like you said, are closed-minded, that grew up very tight-knit community, and it's all they've been around. And they have yet to experience the real world outside. And like you said, even if you can't travel, like we can't right now, the fact that you can hop on the internet and reach out to people. Even if you don't reach out, you just pull up articles of other cultures and religions and whatnot, and find out how similar we are. It will lead one day, hopefully, to this ignorant hate that some people have dissipating. And I know with your interview with Bart Brandsma, if I said his name correctly, you asked him if he ever feels like racism in general will end, and he said no, because there'll always be people who hate and yada yada. It's kind of like a running joke in my opinion, but I truly believe it as well, that racism will end one day for sure. And it might just be when everybody hooks up with everybody and we're all back to being the same color, essentially, you know. But it kind of just leads to the same thing, that definitely the amount of racism back then, it was a lot more, it was a lot quiet and like sheltered in a sense, unless something happened. But now with social media, you know, ignorant people have a voice sometimes, and they can spread out that hate and get other people to, you know, like-minded individuals to form their own group. And now you got this huge vocal group of hate and bigotry and whatnot. And slowly but surely, I think we are chipping away at that. We need to do it faster. But the world, that's not the way the world works, sadly. But I definitely want to, I know our time's coming up, so I want to thank you so much. One last thing I want to say before I give it up to you is, when I heard about you, I knew of your lectures and your talks with Klansmen and your opening their minds and having them see a different picture, right? I never listened to your music, but I love music. That's one thing I thank my mother for. So when your receptionist, when I got the confirmation that I was going to be able to have you on, I was like, well, crap, this man plays blues music, jazz, and all that kind of stuff. I love that type of music. Let me listen to his stuff. So you have a thing on Spotify, right? And the first song that hit was Broad-Minded. And so I'm thinking, I was like, all right, this is open-minded guy. I'm a get this. And buddy, was I laughing. I mean, because I had this one view of you, and you kind of get what words. I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes, I was at work laughing my ass off. It was so funny. I was like, this is my kind of guy. I'm like this. I'm definitely going to enjoy this. Daryl, once again, I cannot thank you enough. I'm still shaking. I'm crazy nervous. Is there anything you want to say before we go?
I just finished writing my second book, and okay. it's going through the editing process now. But maybe, you know, when it does come out, probably won't be until next year or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd love to come back and talk some more or whatever. But in the meantime, just stay in touch. You know, let's stay in touch and let's do it again or something. You know, we got a lot more ground to cover and we can do it again.
Yes. Yes. Like this is the first time because I'm on a time limit. I actually wrote down notes, which is usually not my thing, but I would absolutely love that. That would mean a lot to me. But again, Daryl, thank you very much. Everyone listening, Changing Minds with Daryl Davis. Check out his podcast. Open your mind. It's not going to hurt to listen. You might learn a few things. You definitely will learn a few things. Let's get that out of the way. You won't. It's not a maybe. You will learn something new. Thank you again, Daryl. And please have yourself a great, wonderful day.
You too, man. Stay in touch. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Holy shit. All right. That was fucking amazing. I loved it. I'm nervous as crap. I'm hungry as shit. And whoo, buddy. Anyways, thank you all for listening. This episode definitely meant a lot to me. Some of you that know me very well know how fucking pissed off I am at anything racism. Any type of racist shit involved is always fucking rubbed me the wrong way. Now that I feel I'm not talking with him, I can kind of cuss and whatnot. I feel like as respect, I shouldn't have done that when I did do it. Anyways, yeah, thank you for all involved. Thank you for watching. Hope you like it. Like, share, subscribe, all that kind of good shit. Hopefully, I can have Daryl back as for part two later on. That caught me off guard as well. So, again, thank you, everybody. I'm going to go eat something and calm the hell down. Bye.